is Admila Sazdanovic talking on the categorization of the polynomial ring.
Thank you. I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk at SwissNOS. And today I will tell you about the categorification of the polynomial ring, which is a joint work with Mikhail Pavanov. And here's the overview. First, I will tell you about the categorification of a very basic class of the one-variable polynomials. And I will tell you how to lift certain operations between these polynomials in this setting. And then in the end, I will briefly tell you how to modify and extend this construction to categorification of Chebyshev and Hermite polynomials. So when I say categorification, what exactly do I mean? Well, here's one way of understanding it. Categorification is a process that lifts integers to abelian groups, abelian groups to abelian categories. So we've already heard about categorification today, and even in this setting, decategorification is a straightforward process of computing the Grothendieck group of some abelian category. Of course, categorification is a much harder process, but you know, it can be viewed as a process that takes in an abelian group and some extra information. For example, a collection of endomorphisms. And then what we need to do, we need to realize this abelian group as a Grothendieck group of some abelian category. And if we are lucky and if our categorification is proper, what's going to happen is that you're going to have an interesting category with the exact endofunctors that will descend to the collection of endomorphisms we have started with. So our goal for today is the diagrammatic categorification of T of X, and therefore let me start with some well-known algebras that have planar interpretation. For example, I'm sure you're all familiar with the group algebra of a symmetric group, whose elements, just as positions, can be interpreted with diagrams that have I from I plus first strand cross, and the remaining strands are vertical. If you introduce the over-under relation and quotient by different relations, here we'll get the Heck algebra denoted by H sub n, and for example, that was categorified by the category of circular line modulus. So let's see, if we push it further, we can get temporary leaf algebra, and here's a pictorial way of representing its generators. And temporary leaf algebra can sort of naturally be viewed as a temporary leaf category whose objects are non-negative integers, and they'll represent them just as points on a line. And the morphisms between n and m are going to be given by diagrams of this sort, where we have top m points and points on the bottom. And the morphisms will be given by linear combination of planar diagrams over, you know, we can choose our field q with variable q or dq q minus 1. Of course, we will allow isotopies, and we need to pick the abbreviation for the circle in the quantum case, which is q plus q minus 1. So in this case temporary leaf algebra on n strands can be naturally viewed or identified with isomorphisms on n strands, n top and n bottom strands. But we can go sort of the other way, where a temporary leaf category can be viewed as an algebra. So this algebra is, of course, going to be a non-unital one, but instead we have a system of mutually orthogonal idempotents. So one for each n, and these idempotents will just be given by diagrams with n long arcs. And in this case, temporary leaf algebra is the direct sum of homomorphisms between n and m points, where n and m are non-negative integers. Okay, so as I already said, our goal for today is diagrammatic categorification of Z of X. Z of X is a ring of polynomials, hence we need a monoidal category. And we want to play with the following rules. So monomials, x to the n, should correspond to indecomposable projective modules, and I will denote them by b sub n. And if we are given an integral inner product between monomials, we want, in this setting, they should correspond to the dimension of the Hom space between these indecomposable projective modules, b sub n and b sub f. So just as a convention, I will rotate my diagrams by 90 degrees clockwise, so that I have natural action of an algebra to the left and to the right. And here are the diagrams that I'll be working with. They are simpler than temporary leaf diagrams, but you will have M points on the left, M points on the right, and then we will choose a certain number, in this case 4, in general denoted usually by K, K through or long arcs that connect left side with the right side. So there are 4 here and they're denoted with blue in black. And then I will extend the remaining points on the left into left short arcs and remaining points on the right into right short arcs. Hence the name SLARCs, which stands for short and long arcs in a diagram. So let us see. I will denote with N, B sub M, a set of isotropy classes of planar diagrams that I've just described. And it's very easy to see that the cardinality of this set is equal to N choose K times N choose K, which is just N plus M choose N, or M for that matter. And this corresponds to choosing K through or long arcs here, where to connect these K arcs on the left and where to connect them on the right. Okay, so just a little bit of notation. If I want to fix just the number of right endpoints, I denote this set by B minus sub M. And if I want to see the diagrams on any number of left and right endpoints, I denote it with B minus. Later in the talk, I will need to refer to diagrams that have a fixed number of these long or through arcs, and the number of long arcs will be referred to as the width of a diagram. So N, B sub M of K, K in parentheses, will denote diagrams of width exactly K. So exactly K long black arcs. And I will denote by this symbol, where we have less than or equal to K, all diagrams that have width at most K. So up to K long arcs connecting left and right side. Okay, now we have to think how to endow this set with algebra structure. So, as you may have guessed, the multiplication will be given by concatenating our diagrams horizontally. But let's see what can kind of go wrong. If I compose this diagram here with itself, I'll get this floating arc, the arc that's not connected to either left side or the right side. So it's equivalent to having a circle in the temporary leaf category, and you'll have to choose how to evaluate it. So, you know, if you're assuming that you're working over a field or, you know, maybe just over C, after rescaling, we can have two choices for the value of the floating arc. And if we set D equal to 1, what we're going to see is it gets two orthogonal line equipotents. So, for example, you can see another middle part of this diagram. So if alpha denotes just this diagram here, which has one short arc on the left and one short arc on the right, well, we see that comm space between just one endpoint on the left and one endpoint on the right will actually have two idempotents. So one, this will be one, and the other one will be a long arc minus that one. So it will be semi-simple, and hence non-interesting for us. We would like get a non-semi-simple theory. So we're going to set the value of the floating arc to be equal to 0. And in this case, even home between 1 and 1 has only one identity. So let's summarize. We're going to fix some field K. And I'm going to denote by A minus K vector space with bases given by diagrams we have just described. Okay. So multiplication will be generated by horizontal concatenation of elements of B minus, and here's an example. Of course, if the number of left endpoints of this diagram does not match the number of, if the number of right endpoints of this diagram does not match the number of left endpoints of this diagram, we cannot compose them, so the value will be equal to 0. And since we chose the value of the floating arc to be 0, if concatenation yields a diagram that contains a floating arc, we'll say that the result of multiplying these two diagrams is equal to 0. Okay, I'm sorry, can everybody see this? Okay, so now we have an algebra. What kind of algebra we have? So A minus is the right sum over all n and m greater than equal to 0 of n A minus m. And A minus is associative algebra, but unfortunately it's a non-unital algebra. If you have a system of non-unital, of orthogonal idempotents, denoted here. So for each n, we have a single diagram given by n, in this case, 5 long arcs. And they would be mutually orthogonal because when we compose them, we actually cannot, the number and the points don't match. So the result of composing them is equal to 0. Okay, so let's do a little example. So let me consider these diagrams that are similar to our orthogonal hypotenuses, but differ from them only slightly. And in the following way, I'll just shorten the ith strand into a short left arc or into a short right arc. The following slide shows what happens if I multiply a generic element denoted by A here with these diagrams either on the left or on the right. So let's take a look. So if I consider this diagram that has a one short left arc, what can happen is that you're either adding one short left arc or we are shortening one long arc into short left arc. Similarly, if we are composing with a diagram that has one short right arc, we'll either shorten this long arc into a short arc, or we'll add this short right arc. So what's the moral of this story? And you'll see later why this is important for me, is that if we're composing with these diagrams, either on the left or on the right, we cannot increase the number of long through arcs. Basically, we cannot increase the width of our diagram. Okay, so now let's move to the modules that we're going to be working with. So I'm going to consider left modules over algebra A minus. They have this property that's just equivalent of the unitary property for unit of algebras. Moreover, I'm going to work only with finely generated modules. And just a bit of notation, A minus mod will denote the category of finitely generated left A minus module. And A minus P mod will denote the category of finitely generated projective left modules. Next, what I'm going to do, I'm going to describe the following three classes of modules over algebra A minus that we're going to be working with. So the first one will be denoted by P sub n. And they're going to be spanned by all diagrams in B minus that have exactly n right endpoints. It's very easy to see that P sub n is in a composable projective left A minus module. The next natural category to consider is a category of class of standard modules, so-called standard modules. And these modules are going to be just a quotient of these projective modules by the ideal consisting of all diagrams that have short right arcs. So the basis of the standard modules F sub n will be all diagrams that have no short right arcs. The third class is just a simple class of one-dimensional modules. I'll call them simple modules, and they're generated by our idempotents. Okay, so here's an example.
So what's the difference between P, between M and L?
These are just one-dimensional generated by idempotents.
I can stick something on the left, no?
Yeah, but that's just the action.
Okay, no, sorry.
So what's P sub zero? There are no right endpoints. So we cannot have anything on the right, so all we can have is a certain number of short left arcs. How about P sub 1? Well, we have one right endpoint, so we can either extend it into a long arc, or we can extend it into a short right arc, and then we can add any number of left short arcs to it. Okay, so how about standard modules? Well, you know, when there are no right endpoints, there cannot be no short right arcs, so P here is isomorphic to M0. And actually, P sub 1 nicely splits, at least as a vector space, into diagrams that belong to M sub 1. And this piece here that's isomorphic to P0 is it's easy to see just by removing the short right arc here. Okay, so the next thing that I would like to tell you is that the same type of diagram actually describe the homomorphisms between these electrical projective modules. So here's an example. If you want to map P6 into P8, we have a diagram that has 6 endpoints on the left, 8 endpoints on the right, and it will represent one of the homomorphisms between P6 and P8. Just as a remark, that all diagrams V minus except are idempotent will act trivially on any given simple module X sub n. Okay, so what are the properties of our categories? So first, if we consider any two finally generated modules denoted by M and N of A minus, we'll see that the POM space between these modules is finite dimensional K vector space. Moreover, our category is nicely behaved. It has a Kruhn-Schmidt property. And moreover, any projective module nicely decomposes uniquely into direct sum of projective and decomposable modules, where N sub I is finite and it's an invariant of our projective module. Moreover, we have the submodule of any or finally generated A minus module is finitely generated. Our algebra is Noetherian. And that basically the consequence gives us that our category is abelian, which is something that we needed. Okay? So now I've described the category, and let me just briefly remind you of the definition of the Grothendieck group. Grothendieck group, projective Grothendieck group, are denoted by K0 of A of finitely generated projective A minus module, is a group that's generated by symbols of projective modules, and are denoted by square brackets P. And it's going to be subject to the following relations. So, Mikhail already talked about it in the morning. So if P is isomorphic to a direct sum of two other modules, P prime plus P second, then the symbol of this projective module P splits as a sum of symbols of these two modules. So let me decategorify A minus P mod. So remember, what happens? Any projective module nicely decomposes into sum of projective and indecomposable modules. Okay? So they're indecomposable, there are going to be no relations between them. So what we see is that Grothendieck group of A minus is going to be a free group whose basis is given by symbols of these indecomposable projective modules. Okay, and now it's sort of a straightforward thing to see that Grothendieck group of A minus is going to be isomorphic to Z of X just by sending the symbol of the decomposable projective module to X to the N. Okay, now what do we need? So what I define here is a Grothendieck group, but we all know that Z of X is a ring. So in order to justify this identification, I will tell you what's the monoidal structure on our category. And then the Grothendieck group of our category will become a ring, and we'll know that we've categorified C of X as a ring. So what's the monoidal structure? Well, we will define it as, on the decomposable projective modules, we'll just define it in this way. Pn tensor P sub m is going to be equal to Pn plus m. And then we can extend it to all projective modules. Well, on basic morphisms between these decomposable projective modules, the tensor structure can be just viewed by stacking one on top of the other, and then we'll extend it using bilinearity to all morphisms and all objects.
Wouldn't you stack that the other way?
Yes, I think I showed the wrong way, but yes, your way is right. So now I have a categorification of Z of X, but remember I've defined two other kinds of types of modules. So let's see whether we can somehow enrich what we had so far in order to incorporate these other two types of modules and get possibly more interesting categorification. So in order to do that, let's analyze the relation between projective and standard modules. So let's see. Now recall the example that I've shown you in the beginning. Actually, I can go back. I apologize. So here, what we had is that if we multiply with these simple things, we cannot increase the width. Okay, so how is that going to help us now? Well, Lattice multiplication by a basis vector cannot increase the width. Hence, if we can consider all diagrams in our projective module P sub n, or with at most m, we see that that's actually a submodule of our indecomposable projective module. In particular, we'll have the following filtration by submodules that have increased the width. So now that we have this filtration, let's see how can we describe the subsequent quotients. Okay, so if we quotient all diagrams here with at most m by all diagrams with at most m minus 1, what happens? Well, what we're going to be left with is diagrams with exactly m. Okay, so let's see. For example, here, let's just consider diagrams we have with exactly 4. So what happens? Well, these diagrams can be partitioned into, in this case, it would be 7 choose 4. So n choose m classes enumerated by the position. So basically, what do we have here? We have m long arcs. And now we need to choose where are we going to connect them to these n right endpoints. Or equivalently, we'll just choose which endpoints to extend it to long arcs. So here's the picture. If you look to the right half of this diagram, what we see is that this is going to be a diagram that belongs to a standard module, m sub n, in this case m sub 4. And then the multiplicity of this guy in this subsequent quotient will be given by the positions of these long arcs here. So basically what this means is that this quotient here is isomorphic to n choose m copies of our standard module m sub n. Okay, so what does this give us? When we decategorify on the level of a Grothendieck group, this means that a symbol of a projective, in the proposal projective module, P sub n, is going to be equal to the sum, so a direct sum will be decategorified into just a sum, of n choose n copies of a symbol of m sub n. Okay, we know that the symbol of x of P sub n is identified to x to the n. So let's see. X to the n needs to be equal to this sum here. Well, what we can do now, we can consider this as a matrix, and we can see that this is just an upper triangular matrix here. And we can invert it. So we can see we can express the symbols of standard modules in terms of symbols of projective and decomposable modules. If you do this simple algebra, we'll see that the coefficients of this new matrix will be just minus 1 to the n plus n. And choose m. So this can be used as a hint. First of all, that means that we can expect a finite projective resolution of m sub n. And indeed, we can construct such a projective resolution. It's given here, and the differentials here are just given by these diagrams that I've used earlier. So b sub n with one short right arc, because we'll be increasing number of right arcs here. I'll show you that in a second. So what we'll get is that this complex here is going to be exact. And moreover, we could prove that the homological dimension of this standard module is exactly m. Why is that important? It's important because that means that standard modules have finite homological dimension. Okay. Well, here's an example. We know that P0 is isomorphic to M0. And we have the following projective resolution for M1. So P1 just projects to M1. And then we can include P0 into P1 just by this diagram here, which would be which contains only one short right arc. Okay. So now we know that our standard modules have finite projective resolution. What about simple modules, non-dimensional modules, L sub n? Well, we can try to construct this resolution in two steps. So first, we'll try to construct a resolution of simple modules by standard modules. This can be done. It's shown here. And here's just sort of a zoom in. That sort of describes how differential works. So differentials are given by diagrams with one short left arc in this case. And then we can, what we can do, we'll combine this resolution of simple modules by standard modules with our with the projected resolutions for our standard modules. We'll put them together into this nice bicomplex and define the differentials that I won't bother you with the details. And unfortunately, what we get is that simple modules do admit projected resolutions, which is unfortunately infinite. So let's see what we can do with
this. So what means infinite? It's of infinite length?
On infinite length.
Each term is finite.
Yes.
So do you know when characteristic is?
Yes, I'll show you in a second. Well, not in a second, but maybe two or three slides. So in order to incorporate our standard modules, we'll enlarge the category that we're working with. So we consider a category that we know by C of A minus, and that will be a category of bounded complexes of projective modules, modulo chain homotopies. It's a natural choice. So let's see. C of A minus contains standard modules, but does not contain the simple modules. It's monoidal, and the monoidal structure is going to be just defined by tensoring the projective resolutions of our standard modules, and then the tensor product structure of standard modules, just viewed as objects of these tensor bounded complexes, gives us that M tensor N, M sub N tensor M sub N is isomorphic to M sub M tensor M sub N plus 1. Okay, so I will not give you the details of the definition of a Grothendieck group of this category of bounded complexes. It's a triangulated category. Its Grothendieck group will be defined, will be generated by symbols of bounded chain complexes, and the relations will depend on exact triangles and translation factors. But what's fortunate in this case is that the Grothendieck group of this new category is actually isomorphic to the Grothendieck group of the category that I've just described of projective A minus. And the identification is the following. The symbol of the bounded complex denoted by X here will just be identified with alternating sum of projective modules in our complex.
Is that, I mean, does that follow sort of a priori for some reason by maybe Murray the invariance and K naught or something?
It's just straightforward by definition, so I don't think we need any. Okay, so what do we have so far? We have the following decategorified relation between symbols of projective modules and standard modules. And we can invert this relation. So since we know that P sub n correspond to monomials x to the n, it's kind of obvious to see that standard modules will correspond to powers of x minus 1. And then we can sort of try and play the same game with the simple modules. Unfortunately, what we're going to get is that they correspond to minus 1 to the k, and plus k just k, x minus 1 to the n plus k. It's an infinite thing, and it can be viewed as x minus 1 to the n, but quotient by x to the n plus 1, and we're not going to try to make sense out of this one. Later, I will show you why I'm keeping the simple modules as a part of the story. That there's a nice justification for it. Okay, so in this new category of bounded complexes, we can see that the tensor product structure actually categorifies the multiplication on average. So if we tensor the projective resolutions of our standard modules, we see that decategorification gives us just the multiplication of these symbols of standard modules, x minus 1 to the n. If we really want, we can generalize this for all A minus modules.
What does it mean so for the...
For projective resolution of M sub n, I'm sorry. So yeah, this is going to be just x minus 1 to the n times x minus 1 to the n, and this naturally corresponds to the symbol of m, n plus n. Moreover, this can be generalized to all modules admitting finite information by M sub n, but no, that's not going to give us any nice explanations. And we can see cooperations between our polynomials can be realized in this setting that I've described. So let's see. Let's a minus pleasantly could a k denote be spanned by all diagrams b of width at most k. Now the same way as we defined the left projective modules, we can define right projective modules, and we can also define right standard modules that will be spanned by all diagrams in k b minus that have no left short arcs. So in some ways, you know, if we have m sub k, then sub km is going to, it can be viewed just as a reflection along the vertical axis of diagrams in our left standard modules. So let's see. Here's a lemma. If we quotient these two guys with at most k and at most k minus 1, we'll see that this is going to be isomorphic to a tensor product of m sub k and k sub km, and the quotient is given over a field, and the tensor product is just over a field, and we view them as a minus bimorphisms. So how are we going to use this to get the approximations of identity? Well, let me define for a given k greater than or equal to 0 the following factor. It's a factor that's going to send our finite degenerated module, a minus modules, to finite degenerated a minus modules just by tensoring on the left with these diagrams of width at most k. So what happens? Well, if k is big enough, we're going to recover a whole standard module. If k is smaller than m, we're going to get zero. However, if we apply our functor in the decomposable projective modules, if k is big enough, we're going to recover the whole module. And if the k is smaller than n, we're going to get just the submodule spanned by diagrams of width at most k. So when we decategorify, we're going to see that decategorified version of our functor, that I'm going to denote by square brackets f sub k, is either going to, and apply it to x to the n, it's either going to recover x to the n, or is going to give us a sum of m sub m copies of x minus 1 to the m, which are the symbols of our standard version. Here's just a justification that this works where we give the higher things. And we'll see that the symbol of sub k approximates identity. So if k is big enough, it's going to act like identity on the symbols of projective modules. But if n is greater than k, it's just going to take the k first k plus 1 terms in the expansion of symbols of p sub n in terms of x minus 1 to the n. So basically, we see that we can get, in this categorified setting, we can get approximations of identity. So just sort of truncating polynomial expressed in terms of x minus 1 to the n. The categorization of our functor f sub k. What else can we do? Well, earlier this morning, Misha described how to define how inclusions lead to induction and restriction functors. Well, here are some details about how to do this in a case that our algebra is non-unitary. And I will skip the details here. Just due to the time constraints, but what we get is that basically we'll need to slightly redefine our induction restriction factors, but basically things function the same way. And let's focus on a particular kind of inclusion. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to include my algebra A minus into A minus in the following way. To each diagram, I'm going to add at the top one long arc. So on top of each diagram, I'm just going to add a long strand. So what does that do? To any diagram that belongs to M, BN, if I add one diagram, that is going to belong to, add one long arc, it's going to belong to M plus 1, BN plus 1. So basically, I'm going to have one more endpoint both on the left and on the right. What's that going to do to the to idempotents? Well, what's going to happen is that it's going to shift indices. So 1 sub n will move to 1 n sub 1, n plus 1, and we're going to left 1 sub 0. So this inclusion will give rise to both induction and restriction functors. And we see that the restriction applied to any module n is just going to be isomorphic to this quotient and quotient by 1 sub 0 of n, which is isomorphic to a direct sum of k greater than 0, 1 sub k n. And our algebra will act on the right just by this inclusion. Okay, so let's see what this is going to give us. So what did we say? We're adding a top strand of each one. So if we consider our projective modules, well, let's just consider them as vector spaces. They will be composed depending on whether this top left arc was a short arc or a long arc. Now, what's this inclusion going to give us? Well, if this arc was a short arc, then this part is just going to be isomorphic to P sub F. If the top arc was a long arc, well, basically all of the action on the left will sort of not be able to touch these guys here, and we're going to get it P and notify I here if we had short right arcs. It's going to be the isomorphic to P at sub n minus I. Okay? So, let's see. For this type of restriction, we'll send simple module Ln into Ln minus 1, and restriction on L0 is just going to be 0. Restriction on a standard module will be isomorphic to a sum of a standard of the same standard module and the one that has one right endpoint less than M sub n. And restriction on M0 is just going to be equal to M0. Restriction on projective modules is going to be equal to the sum of projective modules all the way up to n. And restriction on P0 is just going to be P0. So when we decategorify, what happens? Well, x to the n is just going to be sent to sum I to 0 to n, x to the I, which corresponds to this sum here. And m sub n, which is x minus 1 to the n, will be sent to x minus 1 to the I. I'm sorry, this should be n, and this should be n minus 1. I apologize for the mistake. So this would be x minus 1 to the n, this would be x minus 1 to the n minus 1, and we see that 1 minus 1 would cancel. So it's going to be x times x minus 1 to the n minus 1. What does the induction factor do? Well, the similar kind of decomposition into vector spaces would give us the following. The induction on the interposable projective module is going to be equal to the projective module, in the composable projective module with one more endpoint, while the induction of standard modules will be equal to the sum of n sub n and n sub n plus 1. We can prove that higher derived function, the functors of the induction factor applied on the standard module are 0. So everything is fine and can nicely decategorify. And in this case, decategorification will correspond to multiplication by x. So here we're sending x to the n, the symbol of pn plus 1, which is an x to the n plus 1. And this sum of symbols of standard modules nicely factors into x times x minus 1 to the n. So basically what we get is the nice thing that this induction factor actually corresponds to just multiplying by x on the level of the polynomial. Now, I promised to justify where I kept the simple modules in this whole picture. And that's because these three types of modules that appear often in representation theory actually satisfy a Gerstein-Gelfand-Gelfand reciprocity property if we define the multiplicities properly. So if you have a finite dimensional E minus module, then the multiplicity of a simple module inside of the standard module can be defined just by dimension of 1 sub n times m. If we consider our finitely generated A minus module. We can see that they have this locally finite dimensional property, where each dimension of each one sub n m is less than infinity. So in this case, if we define the multiplicity of our simple module in a standard module, just by dimension of one sub n m, we see that our purely geometrically defined theory also satisfies this Kirsten BGG reciprocity property. So recall that the multiplicity of a standard module, m sub n, inside p sub n, is equal to m choose m. Well, similarly, we can show that the multiplicity, where we just reverse indices n and m into m and n, so that the multiplicity of a simple module s sub n inside of the standard module s sub n, which is going to be equal to the dimension of 1 sub n m, which is just equal to m choose m. Hence, these two guys are the same, and this gives us our BGG reciprocity property. So in the remaining time, I promise to show how we can generalize this, extend this construction to obtain some more interesting class of one variable polynomials with integer coefficients. So in particular, I'm going to extend it to Chebyshev polynomials of the second kind. And here's the definition. Let me just remind you that Chebyshev polynomials will be denoted by u sub n, and they satisfy the following recursion. U sub n plus 1 is equal to x times u sub n minus u sub n minus 1. And they're subject to these initial conditions. U sub 0 is equal to 1, and u sub 1 is equal to x. Now recall that the game we played is that the indecomposable projective modules correspond to x to the n, and then the inner product between monomials x to the n and x to the m should be equal to the dimension of the Hom space. And indeed, we have a nicely defined inner product, because Chebyshev polynomials form an orthogonal set of minus 1 to the 1, and they are orthogonal with respect to the function square root of 1 minus x squared. So what we get is that the inner product of monomials x to the n and x to the m is equal to the n plus m divided by 2 Catalan number. And that's our hint what diagrams we could use now. So let me remind you that the categorification of Chebyshev polynomials also exists. I'll just sort of fly through it. So they can be categorified by representations of SL2. So I'll denote by rep of SL2, the growth in the cream of SL2. It's going to be generated by symbols denoted by square brackets V, corresponding to representations of V, and then satisfy these natural relations. So if we consider the following basis, V sub 0, V sub 1, and V sub n, we'll see that 1 can be identified with V sub 0, and then the multiplication of symbols V sub n and V sub n is going to be equal to the symbol of V sub n tensor V sub n, and we know that it can be it's reducible, and it will reduce exactly into the direct sum of V sub k with appropriate parity, and this is going to be the category by just sums of these symbols. Now, if we choose a different basis that's just equal to the powers of fundamental representation, we can see that this rep of SL2 category is isomorphic to Z of x, just by sending V sub 1 times the power n to x to the n. So the correspondence we get is that x to the n corresponds to the nth tensor power of V sub 1, and we get that Chebyshev polynomials correspond to V sub n, and here's just an example of how to nicely decompose tensor power 2 and how it mimics the recursive relation on the Chebyshev polynomials. But what we want a different categorification that's going to be non-semi-simple. And we want it in such a way so that x to the n corresponds to some natural objects. So now we know that the Hom space between these representations has pictorial interpretation via Temporary-Lie algebra. And in particular, we know that we can either set the value to be of the circle to be equal to 2, or we can have the quantum deformation which yields the Jones polynomial. But we want something different. So we want another deformation that's going to be maximally degenerate and we want it to be nonsensical. So what are we going to do? Well, let's set the value of the circle to be equal to alpha. And then let's consider this element E, which is going to be 1 over alpha, and then left return, right return. When we compose it with itself and put it E squared, we get it's equal to 1 over alpha E. So what we want to do in this case, we want to remove idempotence in order to get the analog of V1 tensor N to be idempotent. So what are we going to do? We're going to set the value of the circle to 0. So let me remind you, we're going to be working with temporary lead diagrams. So we're going to have left returns, right returns, and a certain number of long through arcs. And we're going to fix the k-vector space. So the analogy with the construction I described for in case of Sparks is complete. We just need to sort of say that the value of the circle is equal to 0. And I'm going to have to reduce the isotopies that we're going to allow. So basically, if I have this kind of non-minimal presentation connection between one endpoint and the other endpoint, I'm going to set it to 0. So basically, I'm not allowing isotopies that have more than one critical point with respect to projection on the x-axis. So this diagram will be equal to 0, or let's say a diagram like this will be equal to 0. Analogously to the slack case, we're going to get an associative ring, notable with AC, and it's going to have a system of mutual orthogonal manifolds. Okay, we're going to consider in a similar way standard modules M sub N, where they're going to be generated by diagrams, and by diagrams that have no returns on the right. And the action will be given by composition on the left. But if a diagram contains a right return, it goes to 0. So, analogously as in the case of slacks, we'll consider relations between projective idempotent modules and the standard modules. And what we're going to get is that projective modules will correspond to the x to the n, as they should. And the symbols of standard modules will correspond to the Chebyshev polynomials. So, what's the difference and the advantage of this new categorification with respect to the one already existing one is first that we have a non-semisimple theory, second is that we have a richer structure, we have standard modules here too. Of course, this thing is more complicated. The category of finally generated AC modules is not Noetherian, so there are various complications here, but I'll leave the details aside. In particular, we can just choose a different kind of diagrams and play the exactly same game and get a categorization of Hermite polynomials. So Hermite polynomials admit various definitions. Let me just focus on this one and say that they're unique degree n polynomials with a unit top coefficient, which are orthogonal with respect to e to the minus x squared divided by 2. In this case, the inner product between monomials x to the m and x to the n is going to be equal to this double factorial, n plus m minus 1. Now, we know that this number should correspond to the dimension of the homomorphism space between the decomposable and projective modules. And, okay, let me skip this. And this is how we're going to choose our diagrams. So in this particular case, we're going to have basically temporary leaf diagrams, but we're going to allow all possible crossings. So there are no longer going to be crossingless matchings between MN points on the right and MN points on the left. So we're just required that each arc is simple. So we allow no self-intersections. And we're moreover required that each pair of arcs has at most one intersection. And we're going to allow only isotopies that preserve these conditions. And triple intersections of three distinct arcs are allowed only during isotopies. So under these rules, we're going to have And I just showed the picture that's equivalent to the ones we played before. So projective modules will be spanned by all diagrams of this type with, let's say, exactly 9 endpoints. But in this case, we're going to have two different kinds of standard modules. So we'll say that none of the two standard modules contain contain right returns. But now, because we have intersections, we'll say that big standard modules are those that have no right returns, but you're going to allow intersection and the through arcs. And we'll say that standard modules have no short right returns and have no intersection and through arcs. We do the exact same analysis. And what we're going to get, the projective modules correspond to x to the n, big standard modules correspond to Hermite polynomials, and standard modules correspond to Hermite polynomials quotient by n factorial. Here are the references and future directions. So our hope is that we'll be able to generalize this categorification to other classes of orthogonal polynomials. And what would be very, very interesting is to find topological interpretations of BTG reciprocity property and find categorical lifting of other parts of, more complicated parts of the orthogonal polynomial theory. And here are the two references. One is to my thesis, one is to the first paper that's already posted on archive but not published. Thank you.
Questions, comments?
Yes, well, first, I don't follow most, or I haven't discussed with those genre polynomials, and it's kind of easy to think about.
Maybe.
Are they harder to think about from this perspective?
Yeah. I mean, these constructions, I mean, they can nicely be extended from one to another here, but for example, I think none of us knows a way to, say, get Chebyshev polynomials of the first kind. Ask some other people.
So the fact that they are orthogonal, does it play a role? For some weight, does it play a role?
Yes. So in the case of SLARCs, what I showed at the very beginning, it's going to be easier like this. So what I said is that in the the game we're playing is that this integral inner product gives us the dimension of a home state between projective modules. So in the case of SLARC diagrams, I don't have an inner product, but I can artificially define it to be n plus m choose m, which is exactly the size of a Pond space between P sub n and P sub n. And then later, when I am working with Chebyshev polynomials, what we get here is that the inner product between x to the n and x to the m is equal to the n plus m divided by 2 Ketelin number, which is exactly equal to the number of these diagrams. This is number, there's m endpoints on the left and n endpoints on the right. So Ketelin number actually gives us the number of crossless matchings between n and m endpoints here. So this is basically how to choose, how we choose diagrams in this case. The same thing with Hermite polynomials. So the inner product is m plus m minus 1 double factorial, and that's equal to the cardinality of
one more question. I'd like to ask the following question. Does this diagrammatic interpretation help to factor the polynomial? So given a Zx polynomial.
I see. Yeah.
Because it reflects multiplication, so backwards. Perhaps you could have new insight and factorization.
That's something to think about.
Yeah, let's thank you.